The nice thing is this is stuff that we can actually build. We can get into the water at a scale that our governments are projecting now. So I think there we have a winning ticket for the next decades.
Offshore wind energy has gone through tremendous developments in recent years. Innovation was a key driver for its success. If offshore wind wants to make a lasting contribution to the energy transition, the sector must continue to innovate. I am David De Jager of GROW, a consortium with a joint research program in offshore wind. In this podcast series, I want to give you an impression of the key research and innovations that will shape the future of offshore wind.
Okay, we are here with Jan van der Tempel, who is the chairman of GROW. But Jan, you have another profession, many other professions. Can you highlight your daily work? What are your responsibilities?
Yeah, David, we're here in the DOB Academy. There's one thing I love most, and that's teaching. That's what we do here in Delft. So we do courses for the offshore energy industry. Not only offshore wind, lots of hydrogen now coming in as well, but also still oil and gas and the traditional types of offshore energy. So that's a big chunk of what I do. Then, of course, we have DOT, which is part of GROW and Ampelmann.
Yeah.
Offshore access as easy as crossing the street. So that keeps me moving through the weeks.
Yeah. And you already mentioned, we are here at the Oude Bibliotheek in Delft. We are standing next to a water basin. And it reminds me of my kindergarten time playing with sand and water. So that's what you actually do here.
Yeah, that's what we actually do. There's a beautiful TED Talk that education kills creativity. I think you get a special smile and a twinkle in your eye when you talk about kindergarten, and that's what we try to bring back here. So at DOB Academy, we make courses for industry, which is not only classroom teaching. Then after the classroom teaching, you go into the lab where we are now, and we have you build an actual offshore wind farm or create the blades for a wind turbine and really put the theory knowledge into practice. So indeed, we're building offshore wind farms here in a small water basin. And as you look around, we have a lot of 3D printed samples to show and to have people feel and understand how things work and then actually operate them. We have a game where we do maintenance, and by making right choices, you control cost and operation. And then sometimes the whole wind farm ends up not operating at the end of the game or half of it. And getting that direct insight, we feel trains people very, very well.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost you €1.5 billion. Euros.
There you go. So it's easier to operate it in that way.
Yeah, and we are here to ask you a little bit basically about your vision about offshore wind and how that will develop in the future and the role of innovation.
Yep.
You are chairman of GROW. How would you describe GROW?
In the Netherlands, we have a very long tradition in building stuff at sea. GROW is a consortium of companies and research institutes that focus on the innovation of doing offshore wind and doing it better and cheaper than we did before. So I think GROW is the pinnacle of innovation and industry combined with research institutes actually pushing the boundary of offshore wind further. And we need that because, well, we've seen the plans double. Just a few weeks back, we've seen the plans expand even further, and we need to deliver. And to deliver, we need to make sure it's cost effective. We need to make sure that our companies all actually make money as well, and that we reach those very, very big targets that the government has set us in a way that is sustainable for the industry. And for that, we still need a lot of innovation.
Yeah. And it's, of course, not only the Netherlands, because I think all the partners of GROW work internationally. And the main markets are still Europe, but they are also looking at other markets, I imagine.
No, absolutely. So indeed, all the partners in GROW are internationally operating companies. Luckily, the wind is moving beyond Europe as well. So everyone's busy in Taiwan. The US is really gearing up, and other countries will definitely follow. I think what we need to do is both export our technology, our abilities, and also those innovations, because what we're doing now will look very much old school in a few years from now, and that's where innovation comes in. Then again, yes, we're a country in the European Union, and yes, the market is global, being able to do it the Dutch way. We are quite straightforward. We are very open in our communication and working together. Really puts the foundation under a consortium like GROW. So we have an open way of working together. We have our IP tied down in such a way that as soon as the door closes, we actually can share things, even between competitors, to help our industry further. And I think that's one of the main big pros in GROW, is to have that open communication within the community and then act on it. So just talking is not enough. We actually have to do things. And innovation will only get there when we actually build it offshore, put the steel in the water. And that's, I think, where GROW comes in, and we do great stuff.
Well, you were basically responsible for the first big project in GROW, the slip joints.
Yep.
And we might touch upon that in a separate podcast. But I think that's an excellent example where an idea, maybe 15 years ago, in your head or something like that.
It was actually a research project, so it's next year, it's 20 years
20.
Ago. I wrote a little article about using a slip joint that was used already on an onshore turbine way back when. It took us a lot of research, and then indeed in 2015, 2016, first we just demonstrated it onshore and then offshore, and that was the offshore demonstration was the first GROW project indeed. So just to show how long it takes, even after industry-wide failures of the grout connection and very big headaches with bolts, we still needed a consortium like GROW to pull it off, to show it offshore. And luckily now in Borssele 5, there's also a commercial version of the slip joint.
Yeah, but 20 years, I think the ambition of GROW is to also speed up that process.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the market has changed and the policies have changed, so we are positive about,
absolutely.
About it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the objectives of the cooperation and the GROW is reducing costs. And I quite often hear, well, cost reduction, it's already subsidy-free in many markets, so why bother about costs that much?
Yeah, so subsidy-free in many markets implies it's not subsidy-free anywhere. I think as an industry, we're now learning the hard way that subsidy-free should not mean that everyone is making a loss, because then you're not going to be sustainable as an industry. So we still have a lot of things to tackle there. On top of that, we have extremely big growth plans. Already by the end of this decade, we need to build 1,000 turbines a year in a single country. And then we have several countries where we need to do that, with a supply chain that still needs to upscale all their cranes, all their installation methodologies. So innovation is key for driving the costs down further to make it happen in a sustainable way. That's one. And innovation is needed because the energy transition is not done by just us building offshore wind farms like we did last year to make electrons. We all know that we need to move towards an industry, an energy industry that is fully sustainable, which probably means that we need to make a lot of hydrogen. And that's a technology we have not tackled to the scale that we are projecting at the moment. So that requires a lot of additional innovation in the offshore wind sector. And we have to recognize that the offshore wind part of making hydrogen from offshore wind is still a big chunk. So the electrolyzer will take 40% of the cost, but 60% is still the offshore wind turbines. Mm. So there's still a lot of costs to reduce to create an energy biosphere that actually works competitively in the future, because we need to go to fully renewable and CO2 zero in 2050, and preferably a little bit earlier.
We're standing next to a scaled model of a wind turbine. So where would you expect that we can get these cost reductions? Can you look into your crystal ball and say, okay, well,
of course, I have a PhD in foundation design. So I think on the foundation side, there's definitely a lot to learn still. I know I had a number of recommendations in my PhD thesis that we haven't even touched upon. So we're just building on what we thought was experience, which is just we just build a few and build a few more. Of course, things like a slip joint will definitely help scale the industry, because it helps you build faster and more effectively. What we still see is the turbine growing. That's also one of the points that we're currently pushing in the Netherlands. Can we create a period where we do not scale up the turbine every 2 years? and move towards large-scale installation, because we need to build 1,000 turbines per year in 28, 29, 2030. Then it will help if we can go to a more standardized approach. I'm not saying that we take all the innovation out. I'm not saying that we need to do this on a global level. But for instance, in the Netherlands, we have about 17% of all the wind turbines that will be built in the next 8 years. So if we can say we put a cap on anything you can buy today, you can build in the next 8 years, then we can move towards, can we optimize the whole value chain? Can we optimize the whole logistics chain in creating more or less standardized approaches, instead of, you know, having to buy a new crane every 3 years because the turbines just got bigger and heavier? Because I think on the innovation side, what the turbine manufacturers did over the last decade was tremendous, amazing. And if you look at the sheer numbers that we need to build, if we can put a little bit of a stop on ever growing and consolidate on getting our logistics right, that will also drive costs further down. If you do the car manufacturing type of producing, transporting and installation on offshore wind, that will definitely help us reduce risk and reduce cost. And that gets us even cheaper offshore wind power, so we can make hydrogen and other things.
And the innovations will then be more incremental? Or do you still expect some step changes where, well, the bigger changes can be applied, innovations?
Well, you're talking to an inventor, so I do believe in big steps. I do think that we can still make them. I think what we need to do is concentrate all our brain power on the things that we need to do now. So now it's in, you know, scaling up the installation chain rather than scaling up the turbines. So doing it smarter because the numbers go higher, and still use also a bit of our money in innovation in the radical ideas. That's how step changes happen. And if we now acknowledge that all the turbine manufacturers put all their money in just scaling up the platform to the next big number, if you change that around and come up with real smart ideas and try and test them, and I think that's where GROW comes in, try and test them, show them, put the steel in the water, that will definitely help us make a few step changes. For instance, a wind turbine still needs power to energize a generator to actually operate.
Yes.
So we need a grid. But if we can take that away, then we can make hydrogen within the turbine. So these are all steps where we can go incremental and say we have a turbine and we put in a grid and then we put in an electrolyzer, and or allow companies and especially startups, universities, to think outside the box and come up with concepts. And to reserve just a little bit of money for that, I think that's tremendously helpful, because the energy transition isn't over in 2030. It will only just have begun in 2030. And what we invest now and what we invent now may go to market in 2030. Well, the slip joint has shown it takes 20 years for the simplest connection. It can take 20 years. It can also take forever. Then it's not a success. But to at least assist that innovation to grow, I think GROW has the ability to do that. So do the big steps that we need for the 1,000 turbines a year, but also facilitate out-of-the-box thinking and connecting big industry that can actually facilitate the steel in the water with the startups and the universities to test it offshore.
Another objective of GROW is to increase the value of offshore wind. Looking at electricity markets for maybe you have a different opinion, but I can imagine that for the next 5 to 10 years, we will probably still bring a lot of electricity to the shore.
Yep.
And we already see today in European electricity markets negative energy prices, electricity prices, a shutdown of solar and wind plants because of that.
Yep.
Basically, wind is killing its own business case. What would be your recommendation or advice to policymakers in that respect?
Yeah, so policymakers should not only put big numbers on the boards, they should actually follow up with policy to make it happen as well. And there, they should work together with industry and not try to ring-fence industry, because I believe that policymakers in their ivory tower are not capable of actually doing that in a proper way. So we have a very mature industry already. We see where markets are going. And if we can have that open dialogue and then government actually making decisions, making things mandatory or forbidding things, will help. It can be for a period of time, but we need some control to actually make this happen. So the Dutch government has shown both the bad and the good, because we had 10 years of continuously changing legislation about offshore wind. We had rollout schemes with 50 plus areas cited, then everything fell away again. And then we finally found the golden mix, the current rollout that we're doing. What we're seeing now, it is so successful, and we have our Waddeneilanden in the north, which we need to cross. All of a sudden, our big success is actually working against us. So in understanding what are the market dynamics and where do we as a country and where do we as European Union want to go, I think it's very good to work across borders as well. We need the government to actually put in some restrictions here and there in a coordination with industry. And that always means that some industry will say this is not good, but that's where democracy comes in and government needs to govern. I think you see the same with, we saw the same with face masks. As soon as it's a national mandate, it's very easy because we can all tell each other, it's the minister saying we have to do it. If you make it, when you run a bar, you have to tell your people that maybe they should, then it becomes a mess because then you try to hand down the governing. And that's something that doesn't work.
But do you think that government, for instance, also should steer innovation? Like, okay, please focus on the turbine or on the foundation, or we think it's better to look at symbiosis, ecology, and stuff like that?
I think the government is really capable of listening well to the industry and also figuring out that there's more to it than just the building industry that, of course, we represent quite significantly within GROW. So taking these things into account, great. Steering innovation, especially ring fencing certain areas, I think that's just one step too far. We have to acknowledge that the innovation subsidies in the Netherlands are fantastic, and we are never spending them in every single year. So something is not matching up, and that's not because we don't have enough ideas. There's a little bit of a mismatch between interpretation of innovation. So what we need to do is actually spend that money wisely, and let the industry and let the research institutes and startups come with their ideas, and then let's execute. And any beautifully sounding idea that's very immature typically gets the money. It gets nasty in that centerpiece where we need to scale up. We need to show that it works at scale. That requires a lot of money. That requires cooperation. And acknowledging from the government perspective that people actually put down all their time and money to go do that project and then killing it by saying, nah, we don't think that it fits in this subsidy scheme. I think that's something that we need to align as industry with government to assist the push forward. If we look at the billions we've spent on co-firing biomass, and we did not get to spend the 50 million of renewable energy on innovation, then I think as a country, we're not doing ourselves a big favor.
Yeah, and I hear you say it's policymakers need to work on that, but probably also the industry and it's a shared responsibility.
It takes two to tango,
yeah.
And I think as an industry, we create credibility if we can put forward proper research plans to actually show and develop and show how it works and work with government. Then we don't need to ring fence, but basically what you get is the natural flow of innovation through your system. Yeah.
At the moment, I think offshore wind is one of the pillars of the energy transition, at least in Europe, northwestern Europe. But I think even globally, it's getting, one of these pillars. Will it be one of these pillars in 100 years' time as well? Or do you expect that by then solar, for instance, will take all the successes?
Trick question. I'm a big offshore wind fan, so yes, in 100 years we'll have lots of offshore wind. I think what we need to recognize is any technology has its pros and cons. I think we need to do everything, so there's not a limitation on solar panels are bad and wind turbines offshore are good. We need to make sure that we site them in the right place. What I find very exciting, and I didn't believe in it for quite a while, so we see turbines go floating now, and as soon as we have floating turbines that can be operated off-grid and produce hydrogen where there's most wind, I think we have a fantastic combination to reutilize all our knowledge from the initial offshore oil and gas industry. So producing the hydrogen offshore, shipping it to wherever you need, I think that's a very exciting prospect. And then with the lifetime of our turbines in 100 years, we will still have lots of offshore wind producing this. And I am a firm believer in new technology. We will have a different mix than what we see today. The nice thing is this is stuff that we can actually build. We can get into the water at a scale that our governments are projecting now. So I think there we have a winning ticket for the next decades to at least get the initial energy transition right. And then in 100 years, we will see. 100 years back, we were still running steam engines, right?
Jan, what are one of the bottlenecks, do you think, for the sector and maybe of innovation in the sector these days?
Definitely people. So well-trained people, both in the Netherlands but globally. Of course, there's now this temporary thing after COVID that apparently everyone is gone. but having properly trained technicians from the blue collar to the project managers, that's really an issue if you look at the sheer numbers of things that we need to install. So again, that comes back to innovation, because if we do it smarter, we need less hands, then still the numbers and the growth of the numbers will be so big, we need to train a lot of people. That's what we do here at the DUB Academy. Yeah. So we do industry training, but also we have a program, Teach the Teacher. So the courses that we teach here, we give away for free to education institutes. We have a quarterly session with about 50 teachers now already running for several years. We intend to do the same with the hydrogen, so offshore wind to hydrogen training in H2 op Zee that we're going to launch. And what we've piloted, we've done a few tries already over the years, but we think now we have it cracked in the right way, is going to primary schools and also, well, as you said, we're here at
the water table.
At the water table, the thing we all loved most, and then they took it away and they gave us books and maths and what have you. Bring it into primary schools, teaching the young kids about technology. I think that's critical for getting the support we need. So the societal support. These kids go home and they've made a wind turbine blades or a kite, and they tell about it and they get inspired, because we need so many people to help this energy transition work. And yes, we still need holiday planners and what have you. We do need to make energy, offshore energy, more sexy again, and attract people to this very exciting industry. We're doing fantastic stuff. We had a sailing trip 2 weeks ago with the management board of TenneT, with a lot of invitees. All these people work in offshore wind. They nearly never get to see offshore wind, yeah, as we did it then, just on a boat in Hollandse Kustzuid. It's really making people enthusiastic, showing them what we're doing, because we need the full support and we need those people and we need to train those people.
Jan, thank you very much for having me here and telling me about your vision of offshore wind innovation in the future. Can you tell me, do you have something in your sleeve that you think we're going to be surprised on in the next couple of years?
Yes, it's really high up my sleeve, but in DOT, as a proper startup should do, we're currently at a pivot moment. So you have your big plans into the future, and then you completely change the direction of the company. We found out that not electricity and not hydrogen are critical. There's one thing even more critical for the global population, and that's fresh water. So what we're pivoting towards is first solve the water issue, and then we'll get back to the big offshore wind turbines with our DOT technology. So that's definitely up my sleeve. Thank you for that inspiring question. Made me think a little bit. And yes, we will have that out in the near future.
Thanks a lot again.
Thank you.
The research presented in this podcast series is supported by TKI Wind op Zee and the Netherlands Enterprise Agency. Would you like to learn more about this research? Check out the show notes, where you'll find a reference to the Grow to Go web magazine.